This has not been an easy year for farmers. Trade tensions are making it harder for them to sell their products in other countries. And low commodity prices mean even when they can sell, they're not making as much in return.
On top of that, there's also been another issue, really bad weather, with heavy rains and flooding in the Midwest that have damaged crops or in some cases prevented planting altogether.
Our next guest says climate science shows us that this is becoming the new normal for farmers in the Midwest and across the country. And some farmers say that the U.S. Department of Agriculture is doing little to help them adapt.
Helena Bademiller-Evich is a senior food and agriculture reporter for Politico Pro. Helena, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Before we go to the big picture here, you visited some farmers really feeling the brunt of wild weather this year. Can you talk about some of what they had to say?
Yeah, I think a lot of us, you know, we're eating every day, we're maybe using fiber grown by farmers, but we're maybe not thinking about what farmers are going through right now. This has been a really wild year in terms of extreme weather. We've had an incredibly wet year. We've set records on precipitation much of the country, and that has resulted actually in 20 million acres not being able to be planted, which is really record-breaking. And that on top of the trade tensions you mentioned in the intro here, you're having low commodity prices and at the same time, really, really tough weather conditions. So combining that with some of the flooding we saw in the spring, we've also had hurricanes and wildfires in the last year. So taken together, it's just been a really tough year.
And when you talk to farmers, are they looking at this weather and thinking and talking about climate change? Are they worried that this is the new normal?
So the term climate change is still pretty polarizing, but definitely a majority of farmers believe the climate is changing, which I know sounds like a strange distinction, but the term climate change has just become so politicized and so, I think, associated with Democrats that if you separate it from the politics, there's definitely a growing recognition that the climate is changing, that weather is becoming more volatile and extreme, and farmers are talking about this. They are looking at ways to become more resilient. And what my story found is basically the Department of Agriculture is very hesitant to talk about climate change. And that's really becoming a barrier for farmers getting access to help.
Right. What kind of things are we hearing and I guess not hearing from the USDA, the Agriculture Department?
So USDA does not really use the term climate change, does not talk about climate change as a concept directly. You don't hear top officials talking about it. It is very much a topic that they tend to avoid. However, there are still these regional climate hubs run by USDA, which are carved out across the country. There's 10 of them. And these hubs, which are very low profile and under the radar, are still issuing quite frank warnings and assessments and also coming up with tools to help farmers adapt to climate change. So they're not only, you know, really raising awareness about the risks and the causes and all the effects of climate change, but they're also focused on helping farmers and ranchers adapt. The issue is, they're kind of in a politically hostile environment. So a lot of the farmers, the vast majority of farmers and ranchers I talked to for this piece had never heard of the climate hubs, were not aware of the resources that they've been putting together. So there is a big gap between the realities on the ground, the warnings coming from scientists, and what the, you know, political leadership at USDA is actually willing to talk about.
Can you talk about the origins of those regional climate hubs?
So they started during the Obama administration. They really got off the ground right towards the end of the administration. So they were kind of barely up and running and operational by the time the 2016 election hit. And at the time, a lot of scientists and agronomists and weather folks who worked at these hubs, they thought actually the hubs would get eliminated because, you know, you had President or then candidate Donald Trump talking about how he believed climate change was a Chinese hoax, didn't believe in the science. So there was a time when people thought that the USDA climate hubs that had just been set up would be eliminated. What I found is that's not what happened. They were not cut and they were not shut down, but they just have gone into really a quiet mode to avoid sparking political ire or any kind of controversy. And that really has resulted in this big gap between, you know, the work that USDA is still doing on the ground in some places and what farmers and ranchers are actually hearing from USDA and actually getting from USDA in terms of help and also an honest assessment about what's going on.
Talking to Helena Bottomiller-Evich from Politico Pro. She reports on food and agriculture there, talking about climate change, how a changing climate is affecting farmers around the country. And she writes that the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, isn't doing very much to help farmers around the country adapt to a changing climate. Helena, in the scope of the resources of the USDA, how much goes into things related to, again, adapting to a changing climate?
Yeah, so it's a very small percentage. The $144 billion Agriculture Department, which of course is highly involved in everything from, you know, subsidizing crop insurance to doling out loans for farmers to, you know, of course, running major nutrition programs. Less than 1% of that budget is dedicated to climate adaptation. And a very, very tiny percentage of that is actually what's spent on the climate hubs. The climate hubs are about $11 million a year in this, you know, massive department. There's about 35 employees full time in about 100,000 employee department that are really focused on climate adaptation. Now, I should say, to be fair, the Department of Agriculture, their response to my story was, you know, well, you have to look at all the conservation programs we run. And, you know, there are some environmental benefits to these. They're not what we came back with is, you know, these programs are not designed to help farmers adapt to climate change, but there are some environmental benefits. If you were to look at all those programs, that's about 4% of USDA's budget. So however you want to shake it, the actual focus on resilience and climate adaptation in changing weather is a very small drop in the bucket in a large department.
And you write that there was a vision at one point under the Obama administration that not only could they help farmers deal with the impacts of a changing climate, they could help farmers be part of the solution by helping them change practices to actually absorb carbon on their lands.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting distinction. So there are two words that we use in terms of agriculture and climate. There's adaptation, which is helping farmers and ranchers, you know, become more resilient to whether it's, you know, extreme rain or periods of drought. So there's that part. And then there's the mitigation, or what you just mentioned, which is having farmers actually be part of the climate solution. Because if you change practices or you focus on different ways of farming, you can draw carbon out of the atmosphere and actually be part of, you know, mitigating greenhouse gas emissions. So there definitely has been a movement away from talking about mitigation or being part of the solution for farmers and more of a focus on adaptation, even though that focus has remained pretty low profile in terms of the work that USDA does. There's a lot of grassroots energy, though, around this idea that farmers could be this really important part of the solution. And I think going forward, we're going to see more activity from food companies, from agricultural businesses, from farmers themselves actually saying, you know what, we want to be part of the solution. We recognize climate change is real. And I think you're going to see more activity at the ground level, kind of regardless of this weird political situation that USDA is in.
We're picking up our conversation about how climate change affects farmers and what the federal government is and isn't doing to adapt.
Helena Bottomiller-Evich is with us from Politico Pro, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen farms in your area damaged by wet weather this year, last year, year after year? Are you in a community where farming is a big part of the local economy? What have down economic times for farmers meant for your part of the state? And if you're a farmer yourself, how has weather affected your business this year? Would you like some guidance from the federal government about how to change the way you work to adapt to a changing climate? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. We'll bring on a caller. Michael is with us in Bear Valley. Michael, hi.
Hi. I was just wondering, a number of years ago, I heard this concept of carbon credits, but they've always been applied to big oil companies and not to private landowners. For example, banking carbon in woodlands and in fields that have been taken out of corn production, et cetera, seems to be creditable. And I'm wondering if you know of any organizations or legislation that is looking at this, especially on the local level.
Michael, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. And Helena, you write in your piece that people were looking maybe for an incentive to do some of the things Michael is talking about. Is there anything out there?
Yeah, it's such a great question. I think this is sort of the direction that a lot of leaders in agriculture and you know, the environmental movement hope that we will eventually go, that farmers would get compensated for capturing carbon and sequestering it in their soil, or whether or not it's, you know, trees or other greenery that's set aside on their farm. There was actually a carbon market several years ago, but after cap and trade failed, maybe 10 years ago now, that market collapsed. And so a lot of, I think, farmers are waiting to, or hoping that eventually we'll get to a place where they could be credited for their carbon sequestration. There are some efforts in the private sector right now. There is a company based in Boston called Indigo that is, I think they've enrolled something like 10 million acres to pay farmers to sequester carbon. But these are, you know, kind of cropping up in different places because there's no federal, you know, cap and trade. There is no major tax on carbon. And so without that, it's difficult to figure out how you pay people for sequestration. So I hear this a lot. I think there's going to be a lot of experimentation that happens. But in terms of like whether or not Congress is about to do this, we certainly don't see any legislation that's imminent.
Michael, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Helena, I know farmers are very concerned about crop insurance, especially with the risk of bad weather, maybe preventing a harvest or even preventing planting. What are people looking at in the USDA in these hubs when it comes to the future of crop insurance and what it costs?
So crop insurance, I think, is proving increasingly critical for growers that are dealing with this extreme weather. It gives them enough certainty usually that they can get from year to year, whether or not they're prevented from planting or they lose, you know, a major part of their crop due to extreme weather. So it's definitely a stabilizing factor in terms of income. But the Economic Research Service within USDA recently put out a report that found crop insurance is going to become much more expensive, or likely to become much more expensive for taxpayers, because over time we're going to be paying out more and more, and that's going to raise premiums and just the overall cost of running these subsidized programs. So how much we can just continue to rely on crop insurance to get us through is unclear. And I think we're going to start hearing more and more about how these existing programs might be leveraged or adapted to the changing environment that we're in.
Talking to Helena Bottomiller-Evich from Politico Pro, talking about how a changing climate is impacting farmers, flooding and drought are raising the risks for farmers and their crops. And the USDA, she writes, not doing a lot to help those farmers adapt. You can join in with your thoughts, maybe your experiences as a farmer, at 800-642-1234. Helena, how are people at the top of the USDA these days talking about climate change when they're talking about it at all?
Well, it is rare for them to talk about it. But when I think Secretary Perdue, the agriculture secretary, has been asked about climate change, he tends to sort of get around the issue. He'll say things like, well, you know, some people think it's human caused, some people think it's not. And he'll say, you know, farmers and ranchers are already doing a lot in terms of conservation. But they really, it's not something you hear frequently discussed. It is not something that's brought up. Really has to usually be a reporter kind of needling an official to say, you know, what are you doing about this? It is just not a priority or top agenda item.
How about people at lower levels? And we've talked about this a little bit on the show before. Do they feel like they can use phrases like climate change? Do they have to dance around it? How is this trickling down to the lower levels of the USDA?
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. We definitely see less use of the term climate change in this administration. And some of that, you know, is probably a result of self-censorship, you know, officials saying, well, you know, if I can just use the word climate variability or volatility or weather extremes, maybe that's just an easier route, because they recognize that top officials either don't believe in science or don't really want to be talking about climate change. So there's that element. But the climate hubs are this really interesting exception within USDA, where if you go to their website or you go to their Twitter account that has, you know, just a few thousand followers, USDA climate hubs, they're using the term climate change liberally. They're using it every day. They're saying climate change, agriculture, they're connecting the dots. They're talking about record temperatures. They're retweeting NOAA. They're talking about disaster payments and how those could increase with increasingly volatile weather. They're really issuing frank assessments. But if you go to USDA, you know, the head Twitter account, they haven't used the word climate. Forget the word climate change. They haven't used the word climate since 2017. So there really is this gap between how kind of down in the trenches scientists and, you know, officials at USDA are talking, and then how the leadership is talking.
Let's bring on another caller now. Adam is with us in Grays Lake, Illinois. Adam, hi.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Adam?
Yeah, my question was, you know, it appears that farmers have gone all in for, you know, Trump and the Trump administration, whether it's true or not. And I wonder, you know, going forward, do you see that affecting the general public's willingness to continue, you know, bailouts and, you know, and things like that for farmers?
Adam, thanks for the call. Helena, I know you talked to the farmers about the weather and how it affected them. Did they bring up politics much at all, and whether or not they support the current administration?
So politics definitely comes up, but I will say that traditionally, in my conversations with farmers, it's hard to generalize. But I think overall, if you were a strong supporter of President Trump in the last election, I'm not hearing a lot of you know, farmers run away from the president. Certainly there's frustration. There's frustration about the trade war. There's frustration about some of the politics around ethanol and the renewable fuel standard. There's frustration, but I do not hear like a mass exodus happening from farmers by any means. That said, there definitely is a lot of anxiety. Generally, there's economic anxiety. And I think the question that the caller just asked about how long the public will be okay, you know, continuing to spend money to help farmers is a really interesting one. I think if you set the support for Donald Trump aside, you know, even just with the trade war, we've spent $28 billion in 2 years on trade aid for farmers because of the trade war. I don't know how long that can continue without there being, you know, some level of public backlash to say, look, at a certain point, we can't just keep spending billions of dollars to keep this going.
Thanks for that call. We'll go now to Dennis with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi. What effect would carbon sequestration have on the land and whether any crops would grow or which crops could be grown?
Dennis, thanks for the call. Is the USDA doing that kind of research, Helena?
Really great question. So actually, I mean, the good news about carbon sequestration is it tends to make soil actually more productive. So there are a lot of benefits. You also a lot of the practices that draw carbon into the soil actually improve soil like structure. So it's better able to handle extreme rain. You can have less runoff. There are numerous benefits to the practices that go well beyond just carbon sequestration. So the good news on that front is you really could be looking at like a win-win-win if you could get these practices to be adopted more widely. I think most people recognize that's going to take incentives and education and research and a real focus on doing that.
Thanks for that call, Dennis. If that kind of research and focus isn't coming from the federal government, do you see states or counties or extension agents, you name it, taking the lead?
There's definitely more activity on the state level and at land-grant universities. I know Iowa is doing a ton around soil health. They've had a lot of water quality issues. Maryland and some of the Chesapeake Bay Watershed states have been really focused on cover crops, which are one of the practices that can not only help draw carbon out of the atmosphere, but also improve soil health. So there definitely is activity. There's a lot more activity once you look outside of USDA. There's food companies that are looking at this. So we're seeing, again, like some grassroots energy. It's just kind of this weird dynamic that USDA doesn't want to talk about, like the climate nexus at the same time.
And briefly, Helena, as we wrap up, are you seeing pushes from Congress to nudge the USDA on climate change?
So we actually just learned this week that Senate and House Democrats had, you know, they asked for an inspector general, a USDA inspector general investigation into USDA's handling of climate science and communication. And that inquiry has already begun. So there's going to be more accountability around how USDA is conducting this work. And I think we're going to see a lot more come out about what they're doing and what they're not doing.
Helena, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks.
That's Helena Bottomiller-Evich, senior food and agricultural reporter for Politico Pro. She was with us today to talk about her recent report looking at the USDA, farmers, and climate change.